This podcast is sponsored by Low No Drinker magazine, the number one UK magazine for the sober, curious drinker, bringing you news, reviews and interviews from the people, places and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. As a Sober Rebel listener, use code SOBERREBEL15 to get 15% off any digital or print subscription from the Low No Drinker magazine for 6 whole months. Hello and welcome to the Sober Rebel podcast, where I talk to my guests about the benefits they've experienced in sobriety. We talk a little bit about how they got sober, and then we talk about why they enjoy staying sober and what it gives to them. Because going sober isn't easy, but it certainly makes life a lot easier in so many ways. And today I'm talking to Sam. I'm sure you'll agree when you've listened to it, this is an amazing conversation and he's an amazing guy. Sam, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
No, thank you for having me.
You've got a celebration coming up, haven't you?
Yeah, so I'll be three years without a drink, a drug or a cigarette on Tuesday.
That is amazing.
Yeah, thank you.
So you quit all three at the same time?
Yeah, I'm very much all in or all out with anything in life, really.
But that's, yeah. You know, I'm an ex-smoker. So, you know, as an ex-smoker, that one was hard to kick.
Yeah, it's probably one of the hardest ones. And recently I give up sugar as well, and that's probably harder than all three of them.
Really? You've given up sugar? I haven't given up sugar.
I've done it for 30 days and I've introduced it back slowly, but doing the 30 days has really changed the way I look at food and my relationship with food in a positive way, though. I think a lot of people, when you give up alcohol, you search for the sugars that you miss for it in food and stuff. And before you knew it, I've put on a lot of weight and I've lost around 4 stone now. So,
I mean, I've seen your before and afters on Instagram and looking good.
I hate putting up them before pictures, but it's got to be done to try and inspire other people, isn't it? So
I know. I mean, I must admit, I never thought some of the before pictures I've put up of me crying and puffy and bloated. You think, why am I actually happy to share this?
Your past and that becomes someone else's survival kit, doesn't it? So it's so important to be able to do that. I think it takes great courage. Like, I'm sure you're aware as well, it comes with a certain amount of stick. I shared recently that we encourage, especially men, to speak out. And when we do, there's certain individuals that try and shut you down for that. But if you can just rise above that and keep with your goals and your intentions and keep aiming it towards the people that you're trying to help and shut out the rest of the noise, then you're onto a winner. I'd encourage anyone to share their story because there's so much power in it. Once you start sharing your story and you see and you hear that it's making a difference, then you get the bug for it and it makes you want to do it even more, doesn't it? So
it does. And then also it's another reason that you're not ever going to go back.
It's the accountability, like you say, as well. It helps inspire other people, but it does hold you accountable to your own journey. And I think if you drink, with me personally, I've got obsessive compulsive disorder. I was obsessed with drinking. I was obsessed with taking drugs. So what can I do now to use that mindset in my advantage? And now I've become obsessed with my recovery and trying to inspire other people. I think I'll always be obsessive and compulsive with certain things, but why not use that to your advantage? You know?
But you can actually use that personality trait in such wonderful ways as well. We always sort of look at it quite negatively, but it can be a good thing.
It can be your kryptonite or it can be your superpower. It's up to you how you use it, you know.
So tell me a little bit about whatever you'd like to share about your sort of journey to this point, your story so far.
Yeah.
So 3 years ago, that was the moment you decided?
No, my story goes way back before then, really. So I've got two daughters, two beautiful little girls, Elise and Maya, and they're 12 and 13. And when I was 13 myself is when I first started experimenting with drink. So when I was a teenager, which is scary because it was my kid's age, but before I picked up a drink and a drug, I had these negative thoughts that come into my head. And I was, they call it health anxiety now, which is basically a hypochondriac. So when I was at school and I had a growing pain or a headache, and I'd always think I was having a heart attack, or I thought I'd have a brain tumor, and I'd overanalyze everything and over obsess over it. Right? And I'd always had a fear of dying from a very young age. I don't know where it come from, still don't really. But and then I went over the field with my friends at 13, and we got the cider for 99p from the shop, where you queue outside and wait for a bloke to buy it for you, and you'd get lucky or not lucky. But so someone would buy it for you. And I remember going over the field, and I remember drinking cider for the first time, and all my fears and anxieties just completely floated away. And I remember thinking, this must be what normal feels like. And I just felt like I'd arrived, really. But what I didn't realize it is alcohol does take away your fears, and it does take away your anxieties, but only temporarily. And the trouble with that is you're a bit like a loan shark. You go and borrow money, you have to pay them back twice as much. And that's the same thing with your anxiety and your fears. So you borrow that temporary comfort, but you have to pay it back extra the next day. And what that creates is like a, I call it a helicopter blade, because it's a vicious circle. Because then from a young age, I just couldn't wait to get to the weekends, because I just wanted that feeling of relief again. And it just took up my whole week and my whole thought process, because I was just struggling with these fears, these anxieties, these worries that I was keeping to myself, because I was very aware it wasn't normal behavior. And then just searching for that relief at weekends, and binge drinking started from a Saturday to Sunday, and then it went from Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then from a very young age, it was I created days like calling it a Dirty Thursday to make it sound cool and everything, but then it was just an excuse to get more drink and everything. And for a long time, it was Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, just binge drinking. And then later on, other things come into play. Cocaine was my drug of choice. I got offered some from a family member who I looked up to at the time, as the first person I went to and talked to about my mental health. And he gave me some bad advice, said it was a sign of weakness, and this worked for him. And he gave me cocaine, and I tried cocaine. And the same thing happened with that, but it was a bit like the alcohol on steroids for me. It took away all my fears and anxieties, but what it gave me was a false sense of confidence as well. So, and I just went running with that. But what that also does, you feel confident, and you're having a good time at first, but very quickly that drug wants you on your own, and that's what it done with me. I ended up like with my curtains drawn, shut in on my own, just drinking and taking drugs. But I'll skip miles forward then,
Oh, that's
because
so sad. That is so, it's so true. It's quite, I mean, particularly alcohol is sold as this social thing. I've had times where I just didn't want to socialize. I just wanted to drink. And I would have considered myself a social drinker, or, but there were times where I would draw the curtains and just think, oh, I'm just going to cancel everything tomorrow so that I can be hungover. And so I can only imagine with cocaine as well what that would have felt like.
And I think with the drink and the drugs with me, it put me in a state of self-pity. And I think what a lot of people are unaware of is you can get quite addicted to that as well. And I was quite addicted. Self-pity and feeling low become my anchor. I was comfortable there, you know. And it sounds weird, but I was never happier than sitting at home miserable.
It is that habit, it's that behavior loop as well. So when you cancel things, when you, and that is actually then a behavior that gives you a sense of relief in that moment, and that can be addictive.
And I think depression can become quite familiar, and if you feel comfortable there, it's hard to get away from that, because any other emotion becomes a bit not the norm.
I mean, it's a big thing to step out of depression. It's that comfort zone of
Yeah,
feeling low.
and when you're on your own, you can just be miserable. But when you're out and everything, and in front of your family, I was putting on a show and making people laugh, and it was exhausting, because I was laughing with them, but on the inside, I was absolutely dying, and I felt it felt so draining. So when I was on my own with my curtains drawn, just in my own little world, completely obliterating myself, I just felt at peace at the time. But when I look back at it now, I know it was just living in hell, you know.
And then what happened? So you've sort of reached that. What was the turning point for you?
So when my eldest daughter was first born, I was very much aware then that I was using drink and drugs to try and cope. And I played the tape forward and I thought, I want to be around on this planet for a long time now. I'm going to have a child. And I looked at my life and thought, you're not exactly a role model here. And how would you feel with your daughter at this age and doing the things you're doing? So it made me want to get sober. And people always say you can't get sober for yourself, but for me, I couldn't do anything for myself. It's always been, and now I stay sober for me and my daughters and my family and friends. But at first, I was just got sober for my daughters, but it was a long and bumpy road. I couldn't get past 2, 3 days at first. And then I would end up getting long stints of sobriety after rock bottoms. The mother of my child moved out with my daughter because of my drinking and drug taking. And I just kept relapsing. I'd lose jobs and that. And then when she moved out, I lost my flat, and then I lost my job, and I just literally had nothing. And that's when I went to my family the first time for help. And I was really stubborn and still can be sometimes, but I wanted to do it on my own. I did not want to go and sit in a room with anyone and talk to anyone. I did not want to sit with a doctor or anyone. I thought I knew best. And to an extent, I've got quite a lot of willpower, and I got to a year sober and then had a relapse, and I got to 18 months sober off my own back. But the trouble with that was when I got sober then stints, I was doing it on my own, and I wasn't didn't have a social media people like to look on, didn't have podcasts to listen to, and I didn't go to meetings, which I do now. And it was a very scary place to be, sobriety all on your own, because your head asks you all these questions of why you are the way you are, and you've got no answers for yourself because you've got no experience, So it was just sheer willpower. But in them stints of sobriety, I probably was at just as low mentally as I was when I was in active addiction, because I'd given up the substances that were killing these thoughts and everything. So I was just left with my thoughts and my feelings, but I had no answers to them. So I inevitably kept relapsing. And after about 2 years of sobriety off my own back, I just got a place. I cleared up all my debts. I got a new place to live. I got a new job, and everything was going right. So my head said to me, well, that wasn't that bad then. So I relapsed, and after 4 months of relapse, I lost my second home. I lost my new job, and I was homeless again, and I was in more debt than what I was in the previous relapse. I was just back at square one, and it was just an absolute nightmare. And I was suicidal. I was completely convinced that my friends, my family, and my daughters, because my second daughter was born then as well. I convinced myself that they were better off without me, which I obviously know now is definitely not the case. But that is how low I was, and what your brain tries to tell you. I believe I've got an addict inside my head that wants me dead, So,
I'm so sorry.
well, I've been fortunate enough to have friends and family that have never given up on me, and I tried to hide stuff from them. And my that house, that second house I lost, all the bills were coming through the door, and I was just burying my head in the sand, and I just couldn't cope with anything. And there was a stint where I just didn't get out of bed, not even to drink or take drugs. So I was in this weird trance for about 2 weeks. I couldn't move to get I couldn't I didn't get out of bed for nothing. Right. And my dad and brother had to break the chain off my door, and they come in, and I see the look on their face, and I just thought to myself, well, the penny sort of dropped that what you're putting other people through as well, because I was so oblivious to it all, because I was so wrapped up in self and self-destruction and everything. I hadn't really taken the thought to think, like, I thought I was hiding everything from my family, but it made me realize then that I was putting them through hell, not just myself,
And so what was that the turning point for you? Was that the point then that you
That when I got another stint of sobriety after that, and things were going really well, and then the pandemic come along. I was in a job that I'd been in for a long time. Everything was going well. I was paying my bills, spending regular time with the kids and family and everything. And the pandemic come along, And I'd had to move back in after that last stint with my parents. I'd moved out at 17. I moved back in just before the pandemic, and it was like going back in a time machine.
That's not easy, is it?
No. But I was grateful for it, you know. But then the pandemic came along, and I'm a hypochondriac, and there's a virus going around. So I thought I had it four times before I even knew what it was. You know what I mean? And then
it was scary. It was scary. If you've got health anxiety as well, I mean, I think everybody had health anxiety around that time.
Yeah, it was scary. Not only for I didn't want to catch anything off anyone else, but I was very conscious at the time. I didn't want to make any old people ill and everything as well. And I was scared to death to go near family members and stuff like that, because it was just the unknown, wasn't it? And my mental health went from up here just to bang like that in that time. And it just showed me really how strong I thought I was. I wasn't at the time. But I was still trying to do sobriety on my own and that. And I inevitably picked up a drink and then I was out and someone offered me a little, where you put a key of cocaine, where you put a little bump on a key of cocaine, and someone offered it to me, and I remember staring at it and just made the worst choice I've made in my life, because I remember looking at it and thinking, I'm going to do just that and control that this time. It's not going to control me. And I've done it. And the next thing you know, I'm on a bloke sofa that I hadn't seen in 4 years. I've been Ipswich, talking the same made up stories where there's 10 of them and I took the biggest one first, just chatting absolute nonsense, like in someone's kitchen that I hadn't seen in ages, got no connection with or nothing. It's law of attraction, isn't it? You drink and you take drugs and you start hanging around with people that are drinking and taking drugs. Whereas you get sober, law of attraction, you bring people like you into your life and conversations and everything, you know. That's just the way it works. And yeah, I relapsed bad in the pandemic. I just moved in my relapse. I've got a new place and everything. So I've moved out of my parents' house, but I was still drinking and everything. I was trying to control it and everything. And it just completely went out of control. And I don't think I slept properly. Well, I don't think I really slept at all in a month. I went to a doctor, and the doctor said to me, because I was having all these different issues and I was bleeding and stuff, and I went to a doctor and they said, they took some tests on me and my body, because I've been sober for so long, and then I started taking the same amount of drink and drugs that I'd been taking before, and your body just can't handle that because it goes into shock. And my body was producing too many red blood cells and not enough white, so my blood was starting to clot. And the doctor said to me that he said that your blood will clot together and you will have a heart attack or a stroke, because one will go up to your heart, one will go up to your brain. And I was sat in the doctor's with him, and when he said it, that would scare most people, especially hypochondriac. But I remember feeling just relief, and I left there and I thought, the nightmare is nearly over. And I give up, and I come home, and I took drink and I took drugs. Now I know that that is absolutely insane thing to do, but I was insane at the time. I was very spiritually and mentally ill, and I was taking these drugs and drinking and crying to myself, and the curtains were drawn, and I was thinking, when's it going to happen? And just sitting around basically waiting to have a heart attack. And I was sat in my flat, and I found a picture of my daughters in a frame, and I was looking at it. And I remember thinking, oh, you're a selfish bastard. You're going to leave these two girls on this planet without a dad. And it's difficult enough. It's going to make me emotional, sorry. And later on that night, I was crawling around looking for crumbs of cocaine on the floor because I'd run out, and that's where it took me. And I'd never prayed to God or anything before, and while I was there, I put my hands together and I just said, God, I don't know if you're real or not, but I've got two daughters and I'm in a mess, and I need your help. And I walked across town to a friend's house, and I picked up more drink and more drugs. And a good friend of mine, Carl, that comes and does all talks around the country with me and that now, he'd been trying to ring me, and we used to use and take drugs together. But then he got sober. He's been sober 7 years. He'd been trying to ring me because he'd heard I'd relapsed, but I used to look at his phone ring out because I was full of resentment, thinking, oh, he's sober and I'm not. But he kept trying to ring, and I didn't answer. And I picked up all these drink and these drugs from this house, and I was walking back. It was early in the morning. And I was had it in a gym bag, trying to manipulate everyone around me. I was a master manipulator when I was drinking and taking drugs. And I saw my mate outside the little corner shop that had just opened up, and I didn't want to see him. So I darted into this corner shop and he knocked all the booze off the shelves and everything. The shopkeepers with a broom trying to get me out, and I was just hiding from him. And I was like, just wait. And I must have hid in there for about 20 minutes. And I thought, oh, that'll be long enough. He'll be gone now. And I walked out. And as I walked out of the shop, he was just sat on the bonnet of his car with his arms crossed. And he was like, hello, Sam.
Fair play to him.
Yeah. And I was like, right, Carl. He goes, do you want some help now? And I just said, yes. And there must have been a sign from when I prayed, you know. But we walked around this church building. And he introduced me to a 12-step. He was talking to me about a 12-step program, fellowship. And he spoke to me about it for ages, and we walked around this church building for about 45 minutes, and he was just telling me how he got clean and sober. And we stood outside this church window, and we stayed there for a bit while he was talking to me, and he agreed to pick me up and take me to a meeting the next day. And he took me to a meeting. I've not picked up a drink and a drug ever since. And that was nearly 3 years ago. But that church window we were stood outside of, 6 months later, I got asked to do a talk inside that church. And we're normally in a different room in that church, but that room was vacant that day. So we had to go into the other room, which was, and I had to stand in front of the church window that I was talking to him on the other side out of. And I spoke to 20 other addicts about my story to help inspire them. 6 months later, exactly the same spot, but inside the church. Oh. So it came full circle.
Oh my gosh, Sam. Oh, I'm emotional. Thank goodness for him sticking around.
Yeah. And he's been there for me ever since, and he's my best friend. We got he probably regrets getting me sober, because I drag him to all different places now. He doesn't like public speaking, but I make
you get
him do
public
it
speaking, yeah. And because I've sort of followed you for since I've been on Instagram doing it, and I've always sort of watched what you've been doing and how you are now and the life you've got now. You wouldn't imagine.
Yeah. And it happens
how bad it got.
It happens quickly as well. In 3 years, the amount I've achieved, I was nearly dead. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's why I'm so passionate about sharing my story, because it's never too late for anyone. Because what nearly stopped me getting well is because I thought it's too late for me. But now I'm proof to other people, and you are, and everyone else that shares their stories, that it's never too late for anyone.
Yeah.
And the body will heal itself very quickly as well.
And how are you now, sort of physically? Obviously, you had that sort of health scare. I mean, we'll get on to talking about some of the amazing things that you do.
Yeah.
For health.
Yeah. So I went and got blood tests done 3 months after I got them blood tests done, and my bloods had gone back to completely normal. The mind took a little longer to heal than the body did, but I was willing to put in the work, and it all starts with a healthy body. So the body will heal a lot quicker than all you got to do is stop putting poison in your body and start putting some good stuff in your body, and you'll be surprised how much it will thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it is just amazing how resilient our bodies are.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
When you stop putting poison in them.
Yeah, that's it. They're very forgiving as well. I was putting not just alcohol toxins, but cigarettes and drugs as well into my bodies. Plus, when you're drinking, smoking and taking drugs, if when you're not eating much anyway, but when you do eat, you're not making the best choices and everything. So it's an all-round bad lifestyle, you know. So these days it's completely different. I don't put any of them in my body, and I've gone from sticking cocaine up my nose, which I didn't know what was in it, to reading what's on the back of packets of stuff. Oh no, it's got stevia in it. Can't be having that.
It's brilliant. What a mindset shift.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Wow. So let's start talking then about the three areas, and thank you so much for sharing that.
No, no
worries.
That's
going to help a lot of people. And I think that the most interesting thing you said there is that it's never too late. I mean, the message I say to people is it's never too early, because a lot of people say that, oh, I'm not that bad, or, you know, I can take days off. And I just go, look, cut it out of your life. You're going to see a massive difference, or you'll be better able to cope with things. But you're actually sort of from the other perspective saying, you know, I'd written myself off.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. I completely written myself off, and it, if I look back at it now, in all honesty, I was willing to take the easy way out because it's not easy to get clean and sober, but it is fucking worth it. Do you know what I
It
mean? And
is.
yeah, and
It
you
really
just
is.
and you've got to take a few steps in the right direction. But once you do, it's like learning to walk again, I say. At first, you're on your knees when you come out of. Well, for me personally, I was at rock bottom. I know your story's different. I think everyone else's story's different. But wherever you start, with me, it's rock bottom. I come out crawling, and then I started walking again. Then I started running, and then I started fucking flying. And it all starts happening quickly. You just got to start going on momentum, you know.
You have to carry, yeah, you've just got to carry the momentum through.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
So you did you end up going to a fellowship then, or was it just that you?
Yeah. I still go to meetings and stuff now. I work the program that they do, and it really helped me. With me, I do other stuff as well. I think it helps to have all different tools in your armor and everything. But the opposite to addiction is connection, and that has been the game changer for me this time. All them stints of sobriety I had, I was trying to do it on my own, but this time around, the biggest difference for me is going to listen to someone else. I was ignorant and arrogant enough to think I could do it on my own. But this time round, I share my story because I know how powerful it is for other people. And when I've heard someone who's 27 years sober to think I can do it on my own without listening to his wisdom or his advice is ignorant and arrogant. And listening to other people that have walked that road that's less traveled before me is the key that's kept me sober.
And that is the thing, isn't it? Because the road most traveled is alcohol.
Yeah.
In the world we live in, you know, you can soon look and see people who've traveled that road, and you know, you can see the experience they have. But when it comes to sobriety, it's a whole new ball game. I mean, how do you
Yeah.
navigate things? How do you deal with emotions? How do you deal with resentments?
Yeah.
How are you going to make sure that when something
Yeah.
happens, that that isn't your first thought, that
Yeah.
I'll have a drink?
Yeah. The thing with me, the one thing I've learned in this stint of sobriety that has completely switched the game on its head is realizing that any emotion I'm in, right, is only temporary. If I feel anxious now, that's all right. I can sit with it because I ain't going to be anxious later on. Whereas before, when I felt anxious, oh my God, I'm anxious, and I panic and then end up having a panic attack. But now I can just say, oh, I'm anxious. All right. Well, this will pass. When I'm sad, yeah, it's not very nice, but I can sit with it and it will pass. Every emotion, happy, it will, even happy, it's going to pass, but you know it's going to come back again. But every single emotion we have, it's only temporary, and they come around and around. And you don't have to be dramatic about it because I fucking was for a long time. When I felt sad or I felt anxious or fearful, I thought it was the end of the world. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
So I asked my guests on, as I asked you, to talk about
yeah.
three areas of your life that have changed. I mean, there's got to be so many for you,
Yeah.
but just sort of encapsulated it into three different topics.
Yeah.
What's your first one?
So connection, but I think we covered most of that, didn't we?
But it is
But
really important, isn't it?
it
Connection.
is. It is because, like I said, I tried to go through things on my own so many times, and I think a lot of people do, especially if you're stubborn and men more than anyone as well. We don't like to ask other people for help. It's an ego thing, and a lot of men don't feel comfortable talking about it. But I guarantee you, once you start, you won't be able to stop talking
Yeah.
about it because it has such an effect. It helps. You know what I mean? Like I heard a saying once that my nose lives above my mouth, but it don't tell me when my breath stinks. I need someone else to do that for me. Do you know what I mean? We need each other. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
That.
But we need each other. And the thing I've found about online and stuff like we're in the fellowship, I mean, we get a sponsor who helps guide you for stuff. And that's been an absolute game changer for me. And the sponsor's not someone that tells you what to do. They're just there to guide you because I've got a head on my shoulder that gets a bit fuzzy. And I can give someone else great advice, but I'm not always good at listening to myself. So I just need a bit of guidance. And you already know the answer that your sponsor's going to give you. You just need that reassurance sometimes. And that's what it is for me. Having a sponsor, I'll put it in football terms because I love a bit of football and everything, but Cristiano Ronaldo is one of the best footballers in the world, but he's even better when he's got Alex Ferguson on the sidelines, just guiding him while he's in the madness. And that's a bit like having a sponsor for me, you know, having connection with other people and people that have been in the same journey and worn the same shoes, walked them same miles as you. You're just adding tools to your armor by that, you know.
Yeah, and it's like you said, actually, it's a level of arrogance, really, to think that we can have all the answers. I mean, I'm a firm believer in lifelong learning. I'm still studying, I'm always reading. I don't think I have all the answers. And in the line of work that I'm in, when you're studying and you're reading, one of the first things they will say is if any scientist, for example, says they've got the definitive answer about something, they're delusional. Nobody ever has the definitive answer,
No.
but
A lot. I
we
used to
can
like to think
learn.
I did. In this day and age as well, like for me personally, I'm an addict, and I always will be, but I've got my addiction under control. But there's no better time to be an addict because of all the stuff that's on offer for us now. Like this podcast that you've got, I've only just stumbled on it myself, but it's bloody brilliant. Do you know what I
Oh,
mean?
thank you very much.
And there was that's how I what kicked me off getting back sober, what helped me out in the beginning before I found the fellowship and that again. I was getting sober, I kept relapsing, but I was listening. I don't know if you know, and Be Sober.
Yes.
Yeah, I found their podcast when I was sat on a forklift and I kept relapsing. I kept putting it in my ear and that stopped me drinking for a couple of days. All right, I kept relapsing after that, but it got the ball rolling again. Do you know what I mean? So there's podcasts, there's sober accounts, there's fellowships, there's so much on offer out there these days that there never used to be. And the stigma's getting broken a lot about it as well. I really
There is.
feel, I re I you said it in one of your podcasts recently, but I agree. I really feel like there's a shift in this in the sober community, and I think we're all part of that. It's something to be proud of, you know.
I think that massively. And I think the more that we talk about things, the more that we, you know, if we can get just a bit more awareness around the fact that this is an addictive substance. So let's focus on alcohol because that's, you know, that's my area of expertise, I suppose. That's what I was very much, I was a drinker. But there's this idea that it's not, oh, you know, a glass of wine is good for you
I
or.
found it very interesting. I never watch the news these days because it just doesn't do my mental health any good. But I stumbled across it the other day when I was looking for something on the TV, and they were talking about smoking, banning smoking in pub gardens. And there's all these people with beer glasses and wine going, "Yeah, it's not good for you." So I'm thinking, well, I agree. Do you know what I mean? Like people should still have their choice, I think, but I agree with what they're saying about smoking, but how can you be saying that about cigarettes when alcohol is in your hand and it does exactly the same thing? Like it baffles me, but people aren't ready to look at alcohol like that yet, I don't think. You know, it's not even mentioned that it's
No.
bad for you. It's if anything, it's the opposite. It's glorified because you'll put an advert on. There's a bloke drinking out of a tux, and it's all sophisticated, and it makes it look like it's a wonderful time. But they don't show the reality. And I live opposite a taxi rank. I've lived the reality, and now I see it every
You
weekend.
watched it. Yeah, all.
They show James Bond drinking a nice sophisticated drink, but they're not showing James Smith pissing up against a lamppost, calling his wife every name under the sun. Do you know what I mean?
They should put that on the advert, shouldn't they?
You're meant to say, aren't you? I'm not anti-alcohol, and in an extent, I'm not. Like I know some people have it as a passion of theirs, and I think it's good to have passions and everything. And these are a small majority of people that can just have one as a passion, enjoy it for the flavor and everything. But that is a very small majority. And if you look at your towns at weekends and everything, there's a lot of people that can't handle it, and there's a lot
Yeah,
of
there's more
people
people
that.
that can't, isn't there?
Yeah, there is, and I just think it's such a shame that it's so drilled into our culture and everything as well. Because what I've learned in my recovery is that this past 3 years, all I've done is make memories with my friends, my family, and my loved ones. And the past decade before that, all I did was lose them. And there's no getting them back. We're here for a short time, like on this planet. That we're not here to be putting the poison in our body that makes us forget about the things that are most important to us. And not just that, the amount of times I've been blacked out and don't remember the evening, what a waste of life, you know? This past 3 years, I've been present and I can tell you everything I've done this past 3 years. I can't do that for the 10 years previous to that, you know? Like I'd get so shit-faced that I would go out and my brain would think, I'm not fucking dealing with this. I'm getting out of it. Do you know what I mean? So I just, it would leave my body to wander off on its own. And it would get up to all sorts because I'd wake up in a police cell not knowing why I was there with cuts on my knuckles. Now, that is one of the most scariest things in the world because you've got to wait until the policeman comes around and you have no idea what you've done. You could have killed someone. Do you know what I mean? You could be because your brain's left the building. You have no idea what's gone on. That's scary. And that's why the prisons are full when 90% of the people in them were under an influence of one thing or another, you know?
Yeah, and you're not making those sound judgments that you make when you're sober, which is really something not to be underestimated.
No,
The idea
100%.
of saying things that you know you mean, and you know, in sobriety, you have clarity, you can take time to think about something.
Yeah, when you're sober, you're a true version of yourself, aren't you? When you're drunk, you're just an exaggerated version of yourself, and you say and do things that you wouldn't ever dream of doing when you're sober.
Exactly.
And then things can stay with your lifetime, trust me.
So what's your second area?
Cold water therapy. I think it was one of the things that saved my life. With them meetings and stuff, when I relapsed last and I was getting back on my feet and everything, I started Googling natural ways because I've always suffered with panic attacks. And before the pandemic, I hadn't had a panic attack in years. I'd been working on myself and my headspace was good and everything. And then that came along, I had all these thoughts again, like health anxiety thoughts again. I hadn't had them for a long time. And so I looked for natural ways to get rid of panic and anxiety and stuff and saw someone doing like cold showers on YouTube. And they'd done 30 days. So I put on my Instagram, I'm going to do 30 days of cold showers and see how it goes. And I was riddled with fear and anxiety and I was newly sober and everything. And it was, I was a bit of a mess. And I'd done 30 days of cold showers, but after 15 days of them in a row, I felt amazing. And I thought, God, there's something to this. So I was putting on the Instagram and I was walking down the prom with my cousin, like a true addict, nothing like showers weren't enough. So I said, I'm going to jump in the North Sea every day for a year. And I was going to do it from this was on the 14th of March. And I said, I'm going to jump in the North Sea every single day for a year from my birthday, 12th of July, to the 12th of July, my next birthday. And he went, you won't jump in the North Sea every single day for a year. So I got home and I put on the Instagram, from tomorrow, I'm going to be jumping in the North Sea every single day for a year. And my mum rang me up. I think she probably thought I was back on drugs or something. She's like, what are you doing? And I was like, listen, I've been doing cold water therapy. I'm going to do this. I'm going to try and inspire other people to get involved. And she was like, go for it. And then I got up in the morning and it was bloody freezing. It was the 15th of March and I walked down to the beach and my sister, my nephew, my mum were stood there waiting for me, bless them. And I went and got into the water on my own and it was absolutely freezing. And where I got in, there was all these rocks and I got hit by a little wave and I cut all my back up. And I thought to myself, what are you doing? And this is day one. And then day two, I got home that night and someone had messaged me and it was a friend of mine. He'd been in a car crash and he'd been off work and he'd been getting down about it. So he came and joined me. And then day three, there was two or three people on the beach. And then day four or five, and then day six or seven. And it just grew and grew. And over the year long challenge, over 400 people from my community come out and got involved. And there was just so many nice stories over that year. I got voted for a Pride of Britain award for it. And the news were down there all the time and radio stations and everything. But there was a local lad who hadn't seen for a long time. He'd been signed off work for nearly a year and he'd been having panic attacks and everything. And he come in, he got into the water. And the first day he got into water, he cracked a joke and he started laughing. And then his laughter turned into tears. And I was just staring at him for a minute. It was like, oh, everything right. And he just realized that's the first time he'd laughed in 2 years. You know, and he come down and he got into the water for 2 weeks solid. And after 2 weeks of doing cold water therapy every day, he went back to work. And he's been at work ever since then as well. He still practices cold water therapy to this day. And throughout that whole year, there was just loads of stories like that. And it, what it done, it united a whole a whole community together. There was groups of people. There were some people that didn't get in the water, but there was people that were the widows and everything come down and used it and had coffees with people in the morning. They brought people towels and hot water bottles. And there's people that still dip to this day. And it was over 4 years ago. And there's a big group that called Dare to Dip. They dip every single morning now. And there's all generations of people there that are friends now that go for tea and coffee and dinners together and everything. And they'd never have met each other if it wasn't for the dip. So it's something that I'm very, very proud of. And
All started with you.
yeah, so my madman used to take drugs and decided to jump in the sea.
Who'd have thought that actually jumping in the North Sea?
Yeah, I know, it's crazy. It was beautiful to watch it grow, but the best thing about it is I was present for it as well, to see it all and take it
You
all
can
in and
remember it.
remember it all. And I used to get in a lot of trouble around this town. I was ashamed of myself, but and they've never said it, but they were probably quite ashamed of me as well, my friends and my family, for some of the stuff I've done and everything. I used to get nicked and arrested, and I was just causing chaos unintentionally, but it's just the world I was living in, you know. And I went from that to getting a mayor's award that I'm looking at now for outstanding contribution to the community of Felixstowe, and then a Pride of Britain and everything, you know. I went from one extreme to another, and if that ain't enough to inspire someone to change their life around, then I don't know what is, because no one ever thought I could do it. I didn't even think I could do it myself at one point, you know. So it's never ever too late for anyone to change. People say a leopard can't change his spots, so I guess I ain't a fucking leopard then, am I?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That is, oh, congratulations.
Yeah,
And to be
thank you.
recognized like that, that must be almost like an out of body experience. It's like,
Yeah,
it's really my life. This is.
it was surreal, because that sort of thing, like even the stuff I do now with talks and go all over the place and everything, sometimes life moves too fast, so I can't really take it in. But with that whole year, I set my mind to something. The reason I chose a year is because I struggled massively with self-discipline before, and I thought, if I can get myself up and go into the North Sea every single day for a year, then what else better way to prove to myself that I've got self-discipline? And it's changed my life massively, because there was times when I had tonsillitis and I still went in, which I wouldn't recommend anyone else do. There was nothing going to stop me to get into that North Sea every single day for a year to prove to myself that I have got self-discipline and I can be disciplined enough to do something. And what that done by getting in the North Sea every single day for a year is, now if I don't feel like doing something, I think, you know, you got it in you. Do you
Yeah.
know what I mean? So
I think
yeah.
about sobriety as well. I mean, you're so right there. It's that I would probably have said, I never stick at anything. I knew I could be stubborn.
Yeah.
I knew I had that kind of all or nothing
Yeah.
kind of in me, that obsessional part of my personality.
Yeah.
But then was it going to hold my attention? And there
Yeah.
aren't many things in life that have. But when something does, and what sobriety has really shown me is actually, do you know what? You can stick at something. It just has to be the right thing and something that you really want.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Do you still do cold water dipping now?
I do, yeah. I'll have a cold shower every morning, like, and the shower's not been that cold at the minute, but I haven't been dipping in the mornings because I was setting up my new business and everything like that. But I've been taking the kids love it as well, and we go in the evenings. I find the water a little bit colder in the evenings at the minute. Once you jump in the North Sea in December, when you get in the sea in the day in the August, it doesn't feel like nothing.
Yeah, you're in a
Yeah.
tepid bath at that point in your head,
Yeah.
aren't you?
Yeah. But I've been spending most of the summer down the beach and that with the kids and everything. I had a bit of time off from my last job in between setting up this business and that. And me and the kids, just we're pretty much half fish.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just in the water all day and all night. Yeah.
So I want to talk about your business, but is this
Yeah.
your third thing that you're going to mention?
Yeah, I think so. It was the future. Yeah, the
The
future.
future, so your
Yeah.
third area, because what you're doing now is amazing. And I know we're recording this podcast episode at the start of September, but
Yeah.
you're launching a business. And so this podcast episode will go out a couple of days before it launches.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I'm opening up my own little sandwich shop. So yes, Dare to Dip is the name of the group that I've turned into a charity now for the swimmers and everything. Dirty dips sandwiches. So yeah.
Oh,
Yeah, I've got
sandwiches, obviously, SAM.
it's just a little pun.
We like a pun.
No, I just got to a point in my life where it's now or never, and I've always wanted to do something off my own back, and you've got to take a leap of faith every now and then. I'd rather be that guy that tried something and failed at it than always wonder what if. But I'm pretty confident that I'm going to make a success out of this, and I've got so much exciting stuff lined up. It's incredible. I'm putting on events with the charity and everything now. Do got different talkers and everything, coming down to different events and everything. I'll go and share my story all over the country now. I've been given lots of different opportunities. There's talks of documentaries and stuff coming up, and writing a book. I've got an app coming out, and it's all happened in this 3 years, and now I'm starting up my own business. So it's just crazy, really. It's been a mental few months because I've had so much positive stuff going on, and then I've been doing it all with a broken heart as well. The universe sent me the girl of my dreams recently, and unfortunately it took her away. She passed away recently, and it's just been,
So sorry.
yeah, it's just been a, I've had so many mixed emotions because I've had all this positive stuff going on, but when I've been talking about it with a certain individual and they're no longer here, it's been really tough, but it's a testament as well to how strong my recovery is now as well, because a few years ago I'd have used that to go off the rails, and it's made me stronger. I still feel her presence, and move forward being the man that she liked. And I've never had to sit with that much pain sober before. Like I've lost my best friend in the past, and I've lost other people, but I've always used a drink or a drug to compress that pain. This time round, it's been a whole different ball game. It's having to sit with them raw feelings, and it's not been easy.
Oh, I am so sorry, Sam.
Yes, it's life on life's terms. It's not always easy.
When it comes to the future, then, your sandwich bar, you've got the charity. What else have you got going on?
So I've got a book that I've written that's going to be out soon. I've done the last four chapters, but I had a lot going on. I writ all the other chapters over a long period of time, really took my time over it, and then everything that went on recently, I just writ the last four chapters out of anger and wanted to get it finished. And the publisher and me agreed that the last few chapters need a bit of tweaking because they're probably a bit rushed. So they're sending them back to me, and I'm going to tweak them. And then once that's sorted, we're going to get that out and about. It's going to be in WH Smith's, which is mad. It blows my mind.
You'll be able to go and like do that thing that authors do where they cover all the other books up.
That's what I will be doing.
Don't worry, if I see it in WH Smith near me, I'll do the same.
Yes, teamwork. I'm going to get everyone around the country doing it. No. But it's mad. I was dyslexic. Well, I am dyslexic, but they told me I was dyslexic at school and everything, and I used that as an excuse for years not to do stuff like this. And they just become a habit of saying, "No, I can't. I'm dyslexic. No, I can't. I'm dyslexic." And Mandeep, this amazing woman who's my publisher, she's helped me with the app. She's helped me with events, and she runs a magazine. And she messaged me about my story because of some of the posts that I write, my posts online and everything. And she said, "You should write an article for my magazine." And I was like, "No, I'm dyslexic." And she was like, "Well, you're clearly quite good at writing because of the stuff you put with your posts. And I never really thought about it." And I
You
just,
are.
so yeah, so I thought I'd give it a go. And people went mad for it. And then I had to write another article for an annual yearly magazine for someone else. And people in my hometown just keep stopping me with it, with the article, showing me and saying how brilliant it is and everything. And then she asked for a business meeting. We went to a restaurant, sat down. She said, "I've got an idea. I think you should write a book." I laughed at her. And then she was like, "I'm being serious. So, well, I'll give it a go." But then you start getting further into the book and you're realizing how far you've come, and you're taking it out of here and you're putting it on paper, and you start reading it as a third person, and you think, "Do you know what? You're fucking doing all right." Do
Yeah,
you know
you
what I
are
mean?
more than all right. I mean, goodness me.
Yeah.
It's so interesting, though. And I think that's also why, because a real buzzword going around is journaling, isn't it? Everybody
Yeah.
journal and everybody should. And that is essentially what you're kind of doing, is you're
Yeah.
writing out and getting things out. But writing a book is different because you're structuring it and then you're going back, like you say, and reliving certain elements.
I use my social media as journaling as well, but it's just a public journal. Do you
It
know?
is, yeah.
But I think they're very helpful. On the app that we've got coming out, there's going to be a page on there where people can journal, and there's going to be challenges where people do 30-day cold showers, and you can journal it as you go along. There's going to be a little piggy bank so people can see how much they're saving on drink and drugs and cigarettes and stuff. There's going to be little sobriety chips that people can collect each time they get to a mark and everything. Plus, there's going to be all different recipes and stuff on there, but with foods with what vitamins and minerals are in them and that as well. Because if you're coming off a relapse with drink or drugs and everything, it's very important to get the right sort of minerals and vitamins back into your body then quite quickly, I think.
And I love your recipes online when you're doing your cooking.
They've been slacking a lot lately because all I've been eating is meat, fish, egg, and veg, and it's quite hard to make that look pretty on a
I
plate.
do look
But
out for your recipes.
I
I
know,
mean,
I
you're a
just want a bowl
chef.
of pasta. I was a chef. I was at uni and trained chef, and I always wanted to be a chef when I was younger, and then all my addictions and stuff took over, and I was still doing it for a bit, but then when my daughters come along, I just didn't want to be putting in the hours into a kitchen and not seeing them. I had to make a choice. So I either get into a kitchen and work every hour under the sun and miss them growing up, or I went and got on a forklift for 10 years, and then I had them at weekends. And I don't regret my decision at all. I watched my kids grow up, but I sacrificed chefing. And then after the pandemic and I got sober, everyone was crying out for chefs. So someone offered me a job up in Essex in a kitchen. So I went up there and took that, and I could negotiate my hours. So I still got my weekend time because I worked every other weekend. So I still got the time with the kids and doing the job I loved. And once people in restaurants down here heard I was chefing again, they got in contact with me, and then I got a job down here. Then went to another place because my head chef from the last place was building a new team and everything, and asked me to go with him. And then I just took the leap of faith and gone at it on my own.
Yeah, so it's a real passion, isn't it? Food for you. So the sandwich
Yes, with me, it's my happy place cooking. And that's another thing with drinking and taking drugs. When we were talking before, you're just not yourself. You just become a different version of yourself. And I wasn't interested in food whatsoever when I was drinking and taking drugs. So I'd get a takeaway if I ate at all. I just lost my passion for food, for life, really. But before then, it was my nan. She loves cooking. She was always in the kitchen. She's got a garden the size of a football pitch, and she grows all her own veg. I was up there the other day, and she's 83, and she's pushing a wheelbarrow around her garden.
oh my goodness, it's good for the old health, that is, doing the gardening. And
Organic beds and everything, growing it all herself and that. But her passion for cooking was it gave me a passion for it from a young age and that. And I'll be using a lot of her old recipes for carrot cake and stuff in my new sandwich shop. So it's nice. But I'm a bit backwards in life, I think, because a lot of people get stressed and worked up when they're in the kitchen. These days, if I'm stressed and worked up, I'll go into a kitchen and cook. It does the opposite to me.
you've worked out your natural releases, though, haven't you? You sort of, it really does help, especially when you've grown up with anxiety or overthinking and health anxiety, to work out your own fixes. So it's cold water, it's cooking,
My dad is also a really good cook, and he's helping out a lot with the sandwich shop and that now. Him and my mum have got gyms and everything, but my dad's getting excited about it and getting recipes out and everything. We're going to be doing his famous Texas chili to go on jacket potatoes down there and stuff. So now my daughter, I love it. She gets a frying pan out, she's in the kitchen, and she starts cooking up her own stuff and everything. But she loves her hot sauces and that at the minute. She can't stop eating them. Do you know, for Christmas, instead of having a chocolate advent calendar, I had to get her a hot sauce one.
really? I didn't even know they did
Neither
those.
did I, but she found out.
So it's obviously going to be a bit of a legacy then.
Yeah, it's going to be a family-run thing, and it's just something that we can all bond together over. It's going to be brilliant. I'm really looking forward to it. You've got to go with your gut in life, and that's what I'm doing with this, you know?
You do. And take that brave leap.
Yeah, exactly. If you stay in the comfort zone, you can have a nice life. But if you jump out of it, you can have a brilliant one.
So what would you say to yourself at the start?
Well, when I was in active addiction, I'd say don't give up because I very nearly did. And I did a couple of times in to an extent. But that's what I would say, just keep putting one foot in front of the other. You can be sat in the dark for a long time, but it only takes someone to turn a light bulb on and it won't you won't be there forever, right? We can get very caught up in our feelings and our emotions, and what that does is that leaves us thinking that how we feel at that time is how we're going to feel forever. But in reality, it's only one decision away from a completely different life. I had two doors in front of me when I got told that I was going to die, right? Death and giving up, or going through the other one and going into a positive future, right? And for a long time, I didn't think I had a future, but all it took was to go through that door and just take a leap of faith and think, just give it one last go. What have you got to lose? If you're already thinking that way inclined that, oh, you're going to die, then you might as well give it one more try, And you never know what can happen. And if I'd died, like so many other people have with this disease, everything that I've accomplished in these 3 years would never have happened. And if I can do what I've done in 3 years, anyone is capable of that. Because I don't know if you've seen old pictures of me.
I haven't. I don't think I could go looking
No.
back at your Instagram.
No, I was. I no. No one thought that I could change it around because I didn't even think it myself. But I was a lost cause. But if a lost cause can do the things I've done, anyone can. There's hope for anyone, and it's never too late. No matter how much you think it is, no matter how many times you think it is too late. I think that makes sense.
And that's the thing, isn't it? It's people realizing that it's never too late, that you don't have to, because you do get in that real downward spiral.
You think you're running on empty, but what you don't realize is that you've got so much in reserve, and we're not aware of that at the time, And there's so much more in the tank than what you realize. And if you're addicted to drink and drugs as well, then you've already got a mindset of getting shit done, because ain't no one more motivated than someone that's run out of drinking drugs. So if you can use that motivation that you use to get your next fix in your everyday life, that's what I've done. When I got sober, I thought, well, if I finish work at 5 o'clock and the drug dealer was out of town by six and I had no money and I needed to get 500 quid together in an hour, I could do that. Do you know what I mean? And that used to baffle me. And I thought, you've got that motivation in you. Why don't you put it to some fucking good?
I knew I'd love this conversation with you.
Well, I've loved it. It's mad seeing you because I've seen your videos and everything, but we haven't had like a face to face before, have we? So,
To hear how bad it was for you and then where you are now. I mean, it's.
it's a comeback story. But I wouldn't share my story if it wasn't people like you that shared yours. I find you very inspirational as well, and I love the stuff you do.
Oh,
And
thank you.
I think we've got a fantastic sober community which helps a lot of people, So.
We do. And the more people that are talking about alcohol, maybe the government and, some of the marketing and everything else, that's still going to continue. But they're
Yeah.
not going to be able to quieten us, are they?
It's important to do what we do.
It is. I'll just thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you'd like to find out more about Sam, I've put the link to his Instagram profile in the show notes. And that's where you'll find a link to my website and my Instagram profile as well. On my website, you'll find out more about working with me. You can find out more about the sobriety hypnosis downloads. And you'll also find more information about the course that I've created, Building Your Sober Resilience. And this is a course that you can undertake at any time in your sobriety. It's there to teach you some positive psychology tools and techniques, such as flow state activities, learning to deal with emotions, distancing from thoughts. And then, of course, challenging those thoughts. Thank you so much for listening today. I hope you've enjoyed it.